Hey everyone, welcome back to Seeking Witchcraft. I'm your host, Ashley, and today I have on a special return guest, Amy Blackthorne. Amy is here to discuss the social media influence on witchcraft and is the co-author of a new book called Social Media Spellbook, 366 Ways to Get Witchy on the Web with Natalie Zaman. Welcome, Amy, to the show.
Thank you so much.
Of course, or I should really say back to the show. It's been a while, but oh my gosh, I'm so excited to have you back on.
I'm pretty sure it was 2020. So that's,
oh my gosh. I'm pretty sure you're right. That's, wow, that feels like a whole lifetime ago, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, Amy, for those who have possibly not listened to the episode in 2020, could you say a little bit about your background?
Oh my goodness, yes. So I have been teaching since 1999. I started in the greater Baltimore area, and now I teach internationally. My first book was Blackthorne's Botanical Magic, and it's a guide to really developing your craft through magical oils, whether they're essential oils or blending botanicals. There's Sacred Smoke, which is building your own sacred smoke practice that doesn't rely on cultural appropriation. The next was Botanical Brews. It's a potions book, so super fun to play with. Blackthorne's Protection Magic, which is a physical as well as ritual guide to protection magic. There is a 13,000 word escape innovation course in the middle. It's amazing. Blackthorne's Botanical Wellness was next. And then this September 1st, actually, Sacred Plant Magic comes out, which is, it's meant to be a sequel to Blackthorne's Botanical Magic. So it's developing a spirit practice, connecting with the spirits of individual plants, as well as the spirits of overarching plants like peppermint or lavender or nutmeg.
Awesome. Well, you're just killing it with the books, and congratulations on the upcoming book and this book that we're going to talk about a little later today, of course. And I did want to also say your Protection Magic book was a book that we read for my Patreon book club at one point. So that was great.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much.
Of course. Yeah, that was a great read. I really enjoyed going through it with the people in the club. Yeah, so definitely attuned with some of these books. Well, let's turn a little bit to, I think, the topic, and then, of course, we can talk about the book a little, as, you know, kind of interweave.
A little bit of both.
a little bit of both into our discussion. But yeah, so again, we're here to talk about the social media influence on witchcraft. And I think this is going to be such a fun discussion because I have a lot of opinions on this too. But as somebody who wrote a book related to this general topic, let me ask you, Amy, so how do you think that social media has impacted witchcraft? And that is such a general question because there's so many directions I know we could take with that, with like visibility, accessibility, the opinions of it. Just what are your thoughts?
I absolutely love the accessibility feature of the magical community gaining access to not just the internet, but to social media itself. I started my craft in the early 90s and the internet was just really starting its infancy. It was still at that point where you could see a computer in the library, but nobody actually had, you know, there wasn't a lot going on at home as far as internet goes. And so I just wandered in the internet cafe in our school one day and just typed Wicca and hit an enter and something happened. It took me to the Celtic Connection, wicca.com. When I look at those earlier days compared to now where people have access to so much information right in their pockets every day. People say, oh, well, you didn't have to walk uphill both ways through the snow to get where I'm at. And it's
like, of course.
My love, the accessibility is a feature, not a bug. We're not gatekeeping witchcraft anymore. We're telling people, these are the things that are available to you. These are the techniques and these are the really incredible ideals that we can strive for. But there's no need to keep this hidden in secret unless it's part of your tradition.
Yeah, I can't agree more with that. I love how accessible the craft has become, especially for those who are unable to get books on the topic for whatever reason, whether that be financially or no access with their local library or needing to hide their craft for whatever reason with their living situation. I think that also being able to see such a wide plethora of different practices out there and not just saying, oh, okay, the only thing really out there is Wicca or things they might have heard about in the media or like, you know, movies, TV, Hollywood. There's so many different types of magical practices out there that I think the internet has been great at being able to highlight and showcase.
Not only that, but it really gives us the opportunity to illustrate what those differences look like between different cultural traditions. In the 90s, it was like, okay, if it's magic, it's Wicca. If it's magic, it's witchcraft. And it's like, no, my guy, we're all figuring this out together. And it's really important that everybody has their voice heard. I'm a disabled woman. I'm a member of the LGBTQIA+ community. Like, everybody's voices are going to have their own bent. Everybody's voices are going to have their own experience. And the rise of social media gives us the opportunity to really share what those voices sound like, what those practices look like, and how they impact us as people, not just witches or pagans.
Now, keeping on this topic of the positive aspect of the social media's influence on witchcraft, because I think there's some negative parts too. We can get into that, but keeping on this positive aspect, I think one of the reasons I also really love how witchcraft and magic and general cult has become so popular in social media is because it just makes it more accepting in the public's eye. I know there's a lot of people with the mindset that they want to keep this hidden and private, and that's completely valid, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I do like that if I go outside and I wear a pentagram, I feel like people are going to recognize that symbol and they're possibly going to know a little bit more about it. Because maybe they have a cousin or a friend or somebody they've seen on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok where they're wearing that, or they've very briefly talked about it. I think it just opens up a discussion to what this is, and people learn that, oh, it's not just Hollywood. Well, it's not Hollywood. It's not Harry Potter. You know, it's not American Horror Story Coven. It's a very real practice. And I think it just makes it more accepting in general when it's out there in the web for anybody to see.
It really does. I mean, even someone who doesn't think that they've ever met a witch, who doesn't think that they've ever heard of magic or seen magic, has heard of witch talk. You know, there's so much more interplay in community discussions about religion because they come up upon it, you know, on their TikTok feed, or because people talk about it on Facebook. It's gotten to the point where people are, even if they've never been interested in the topic, they can at least be tangentially aware that this is happening, that people are discussing, that this is part of people's lives. It used to be that people thought, oh, you know, it's just that one weird kid in my town. No, it's millions of people in your country.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you bringing up witchcraft is a good transition point, because I was actually going to ask you your opinions on witch talk. So, and for those who haven't heard that term, that is TikTok for witches or a witch audience. And there's a lot of things on witch talk, both good and not so accurate. I'll put it that way. Okay. So with that said, what's your opinion on witchcraft? Like, what has been, if any, your experience? And I say if any only because I personally don't use TikTok. I should probably get into it. But the only exposure that I have had to witch talk is I've had a couple of videos by somebody, and I can't remember her name. I think it has the name like Goddess in it or something. And she has these really amazing motivational videos that are very spiritual. But then I've also heard of people hexing the moon and talking about that on witchcraft, which by the way, in my very novice, you know, beginner search of TikTok with that, I could not find a single original source video of somebody saying that they were hexing the moon. I think somebody just made it up and everybody ran with it, but that's just my opinion. I don't actually know. Maybe it does exist. But yes, what has been your exposure with witch talk?
My exposure has been seeing the gossip stuff that normally would permeate an individual community. Say somebody in Baltimore said somebody else in Baltimore was a jerk. That plays out on a global stage now. The witch wars that happened, you know, in the mid-90s, where everybody's sort of fussing at each other, now play out on a global stage, because my best friend Susie lives in England, whose other best friend lives in New Zealand, and they want to come to my rescue because somebody said I'm mean. Like, those small tiffs that would have happened in person 30 years ago are now happening on a place like Witch Talk. So it's definitely got to the point where people have the option to really talk about these things and work them out. But when they are happening in real time, the world is watching. So the individual little things, you know, every witch goes through these growing pains when they're first finding their craft, when they're first finding their practice, and they're like, oh, I think I might hex the moon, you know, whereas that would have been private however many years ago. Now somebody takes it and runs with it and it winds up on the news. So it speeds the process along very quickly and unfortunately can lead to not being able to keep control of those things. I mean, there's so many advertisements that say, oh, you know, the viral TikTok bunny slippers. Those things happen so rapidly and so quickly that it's hard to keep control of where it goes and how it's manifesting itself. So it can be a great connection point when people first go to TikTok and they say, okay, I want to populate my feed with some witches. I'll search the Witch Talk hashtag and see what happens. It's hard to really stay with the moment because the topics change so rapidly. But what we're seeing is because it starts on TikTok, it is influencing the in-person witchcraft fads, I guess, a lot more rapidly than I would have expected. So when you go into your local witch shop and you see an entire case full of Moldavite, it's because somebody on TikTok said, okay, this Moldavite will wreck your whole life. Stay away from it. So of course, everyone wants to buy it and make sure that this is really real. They want to say, okay, is this a fact or not? So it's actually really driving the influence of the magical community. Things like Laurie Cabot's shop in Salem used to do the same thing. They'd have an entire case of, we'll use the example of rabbit's foot. Okay. Well, I saw it in Salem. That's got to be a real thing. Now I'm going to go back to Idaho and buy all the rabbit's feet for my local shop. That's happening online through Witch Talk now. And it can make some people who have been around a long time a little antsy because they're used to these things having a life of their own within their own communities, but not at such a large, rapid scale. Because there are billions of people on TikTok and they're always on their own time schedule. So if you are offline for a few days, you've got a family emergency happening, you might miss, oh, we totally, your jar spells are canceled now. We can't use that. We're gonna go over here to origami magic. Nope, we can't do that. We're gonna use sand. So everybody starts buying sand.
I think the Moldavite, that was such a great example too. Because it even touches on like the commercialization of witchcraft. But
yes,
you know, I have social media, and when I first started the podcast, I tried really hard to upkeep it, but through the years, I really just don't use my social media that often. I think the most I do is my meme page. I'll just like post on there occasionally, like, you know, once a day I'll try. It's really, and this goes even outside of witchcraft too, Witch Talk and all that. Like, it's really hard to keep up with social media and all of the changing trends. I think that Witch Talk can definitely have a place in giving free education and pointing out some of the trends in the community, but there's also, I think, especially for beginners who might not have any other exposure, I think that there can be a difficult time with trying to discern between authentic information and misinformation in these discussions.
Absolutely.
That's really hard.
Because it's such a short form, anywhere from, you know, 7 or 8 seconds to 10 minutes, there can be, yeah, really hard to find the bibliography for your statement with, you know, a meme.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's just interesting to see how the internet has really influenced the witchcraft community. Kind of going back on, we could talk maybe even about like commercialization of witchcraft. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I remember when the whole Moldavite thing was really blowing up, I went to go visit some friends in New York, and they took me to a witchcraft shop. And one of the things I saw when I was walking up to the shop was this huge sign in their window saying, yes, we carry Mulvedite. And I was like, oh, I guess that's the thing. And when I came inside, there were all these people lining up to get to the case where they were holding it. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, I mean, not crazy, but I was like, wow, like these people really, really, really want this crystal. And I can guarantee you it's because most people found out about it on social media. Now, I'm not knocking that at all. And to be honest with you, I don't really know much about crystals. That's not really my forte. But it's just interesting to see like how these ideas spread rapid fire throughout the witchcraft communities and how easily that can go.
Oh yeah. I mean, the price of Mulvedite tripled in just a couple weeks.
Yeah. When I saw it at the witchcraft shop, it was very expensive for like these little tiny rocks. And then I know there is also issues of people getting scammed too, because they were buying some off the internet that was, it was just not real. And I mean, how do you, for a novice person, like how do you really test that? Except for, I guess there's some ways to test certain crystals, but it's hard.
This, for Mulvedite, it's not, because Mulvedite is a glass that was created during a meteor impact. It was so hot that it created this beautiful green glass from that impact, because, you know, material is molten, friction's happening. So when you look, if you hold a piece of Mulvedite up to the light and you see air bubbles in that glass, you know that it's real. Because if it's been melted down or if it's a plastic, they don't have that same consistency. So Mulvedite's real quick, you just peek it up to the light, you know, oh nope, there's no bubbles in this, it's not real.
Yeah, I know with amber you could do something similar, not completely similar, but there's a way you could test it, I think, with like a hot needle to see if it starts to smell like sap or something.
If you don't have a hot needle, I'm not recommending you to do this, but people do this. You just sneak a little lick and your tongue yep. tingles and it's amber, not plastic.
Just over here licking all the amber.
Right. So I'm as a business owner, I wouldn't want necessarily people coming in to lick my rocks, but
sometimes
what happens at festival stays at festival.
I have a salt lamp and I look at it sometimes and I'm like, I kind of want to lick it just once just to do it. But then I think of like all the dust that it collects. And even though I can wipe it off and everything, I'm like,
maybe not.
Like there's something about it where it's like my brain wants to, but my brain also very much does not want to. So I just have never done it. But I'm sure my cats have taken a lick here and there when I'm not around.
Probably.
So let's talk about some other things on social media. I know that there is a lot of people who share their entire practice online. And I guess, like, what's your thoughts on how to balance your witchcraft journey on social media while, like, maintaining boundaries or having some sort of privacy? Like, do you think you could do both? I know that there's some creators out there that won't show their, you know, their actual tools or the real working altar they may use. They might have, like, a whole social media altar. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm thrilled that you asked. It's such an important topic that I am doing a lecture at Sacred Space on this topic. So I hope to see you there.
Yeah.
But the important part is that the feelings that are in your heart are what's driving it. And that should be the main focus, is making sure that your practice feels, that you feel seen, not necessarily the world stage seen, but in your heart seen. Because yes, someone can take your workings and use it against you. Is it likely to happen? I guess it depends on how much time you spend in the public eye, how much time you spend arguing with people online. You know, there's a variety of reasons that someone might have nasty feelings about you that usually have nothing to do with you. So it's absolutely valid that people have a social media altar, that, you know, their traditional workings or their very personal workings don't wind up online. It's considered a liminal space. So getting a video of it, getting a picture of it could add some concrete to that liminality. But the idea that we can't is very interesting, because, you know, in magic, we talk about to know, to will, to dare, and to keep silent. Is social media the opposite of keeping silent? Well, it can be, but it can also be a very potent magical tool. It's one of the reasons that Natalie and I sat down to write social media magic. It's like, if you are doing a money spell, does the entire world need to know you're doing a money spell? Well, not necessarily. You know, say you got a parking ticket and you can't cover the fee before it's due and you need a little bit of extra oomph to get that prosperity going so you can meet your financial obligations. The magic that you create is a finite amount. But the more people that put their eyes on your candle flame burning, the more people that like your post saying, I gotta do a spell for some financial stability, you know, the more the likes and the views, they are magic. They are attention. They do have the energy to add a little bit of oomph to that spell that you just created. So there's gotta be a middle ground if there's something that you really want to share with the world. It's the part that comes in here is safety, usually. You know, it's really important for us to make sure that when we're talking about our magical practice, when we're talking about who we are, where we live, how much information the internet has, that security is a huge, huge portion of what should be talked about. So taking a picture of the front of your house saying, I want to bring money into my house. Well, now if you say, have your house number on the front of your house, now people know you live at 22 something. Well, your profile says that you live in Parkville. So it's a A-frame, like little salt box house that starts with a 22 in the Parkville area. That's really easy to narrow down to where you are and possibly find who you are and where you've been living. Now, the greater your following, the more dangerous that can be. You know, if you have one video that goes viral, that's, you know, a lot of people's end goal. Okay, I want to go viral. I want a million internet dollars. That question then becomes, how much information is too much? When we look at how our life as a creator can be impacted by views, if you're part of the TikTok fund or you're being paid through YouTube, for example, views can equal dollar amounts, but it's going to have to come at a cost. There's going to have to be protections in place, not just physical, but also magical. You know, if you have your name alongside someone like Laurie Cabot, who has worked for decades to make sure that their practice is something that people can look to, there's going to be some people with some feelings about that. So making sure that you're as safe as you can be as a content creator and as a witch, those are one of the things that are really important to take a look at. So in social media magic, there's entire days where the magic and the ritual that we talk about that day is around your security and your safety. Because depending on your views, depending on the amount of time that you've spent in independent communities, that may make you a target. So it's really important that we are taking the idea of sharing our magic, sharing our discussions. There are the videos that we're making, we'll use TikTok as the example. They aren't sequestered to just Witch Talk. Anyone from anywhere in TikTok can see it if it's public. So if somebody sees it, it doesn't guarantee that they like witchcraft. It doesn't guarantee that they're magical practitioners. It may be someone who interacts with videos on witchcraft or magic to hurl slurs or make nasty comments, and that might be their entire For You page. Might be things that make them upset and they would rant at.
I think it's awesome that you bring that up, because that's something I've thought about myself too. For the people who've been following this podcast since I started, I was extraordinarily anonymous on it. I didn't even tell people where I lived.
Yeah.
I give like a general region. I do give my first name, but no last name or anything. And I didn't even show pictures of my face for a very long time. Part of that was because I was in the broom closet with my family. Part of it was just because I didn't feel like it was necessary for people to know
anything. Right, like, absolutely.
Super personal about me. Like, you know, aside from whatever I was saying on the podcast, I suppose, my thoughts and some topics. But over the last year or so, I've gotten a little bit more public than I have in the past. And I've recently just made a public Instagram, mostly because I go to a gym where they like recording us and I like seeing those recordings, and they were always tagging my podcast account. And I was like, okay, I need to make an Instagram that's not for the podcast. I didn't really use Instagram outside of that. So I made one called Spells and Kettlebells, which is like just literally going to the gym and hanging out with my friends. But I really went back and forth for a long time if I wanted to do that, because I did have that worry about if I suddenly start tagging myself in these places on social media, people can see where I'm at. They can see the general area that I go around to. And like you said, I mean, not everybody who sees that information is cool with witchcraft. Some of those people have entire, you know, they dedicate their lives to finding people who do these certain things to cause harm in their life in some way, whether that's picketing them or throwing something at their door or leaving a pamphlet, I don't know, something. And that's a very, very real thing and something to think about with social media. So yeah, I was glad that you brought that up. I also wanted to touch on something you said a couple minutes ago. I thought it was so fascinating that you were talking about how likes, for example, at a Facebook post can give a little oomph to a spell. Let's say if somebody needs finances, because it was funny, at first I was thinking about, depending on the account that they have, they can potentially get, I don't know, a penny or something if somebody views it, like one whole cent that they then have to pay taxes on. But it talks about this broader idea of how witchcraft, and it's just the idea of witchcraft and modernization, because I agree with you, witchcraft is absolutely something that should be in a liminal space. But I think we also need to recognize that the internet is very much a part of our modern day world now. And when, you know, people in the 50s and 60s and stuff were popularizing witchcraft, the internet was not a thing they really, it didn't exist. And so it's going to be interesting to see as time goes on, because we've already seen influences of the internet in the modern witchcraft world and in our witchcraft communities. Things like, you know, we talked about mold, but we talked about witch talk, hexing the moon, you know, these are things that if we had told ancestor witches, you know, 40 years ago, they would have been like, what the hell are you talking about? It's a very, very different world that we live in now. And so, you know, there's one part of me that wants to say, no, like we shouldn't get the internet involved at all in witchcraft. And also, I'm not a chaos magician. If you're a chaos magician, you're probably not questioning any of this, but that's a whole different topic. But part of me is like, no, like how, you know, this is sacred. And this is, my personal craft is, you know, for the gods, and it's a religious thing for me. But then I also think, oh my God, am I like that boomer standing on my doorstep, like shouting like, oh, you young people and your cell phones, that's why you don't make enough money. You know, like that analogy.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, get off my lawn. Like, am I being that person? And the last point I want to say about this is I've actually thought about this quite a bit, because I did an episode with two lovely witches about virtual reality and witchcraft. And I had no idea where that topic was going to go. But these are two people who were very well versed in virtual reality and the craft. And it was, I think, one of like the coolest discussions I have ever heard about this topic. And it really kind of opened opened my acceptability of the craft meshing with the internet. Cause they talked about it in ways I'd never considered before. So this was just a long tangent of me saying that it's interesting to see how the craft is going to, and already has been, modernized by the use of the internet.
Absolutely. When we look at even if we just break it down into decades, the way witchcraft has been personalized and really fit to where we are as a people, it's really neat to see how it's changed even from decade to decade. Now you multiply that times 1,000 when you get something in the palm of your hand that you can holler at your neighbors with. It's definitely interesting to see how quickly that changes.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, on that note, we are going to take a short break and we'll be back in a minute to continue this discussion and talk about Amy's book. Be right back.
I definitely don't miss that annoying week before my period where my skin flares up and I just want to eat all of the chocolate in the world. But with Estro Control from Happy Mammoth, my PMS has gotten much easier to manage. Estro Control was created to help women feel more like themselves again throughout the month. This formula was developed using science-backed herbal extracts to support hormonal health, especially in women who experience PMS. The ingredients help to support the liver, which is where hormones, especially estrogen, are processed. And when estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, this can contribute to PMS symptoms. Estro Control is made specifically for those who are premenopausal, but it also works great for those who are experiencing perimenopause. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com/Ashley and just use code Ashley, A-S-H-L-E-Y, at checkout. This spring, consider trying Factor's stress-free and delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every meal is fresh and never frozen, with chef-crafted and dietitian-approved options that are ready in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options designed for all diets, such as vegetarian, vegan, protein plus, calorie smart, and many more. They also have over 60 add-ons each week, such as breakfast, snacks, drinks, and lunches to help supplement your day. Factor has gourmet meals with ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, and even truffle butter. They're also celebrating Earth Day. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on their menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factor.com/witchcraft50 and use code witchcraft50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code witchcraft50 at factormeals.com/witchcraft50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
All right, and welcome back. So yeah, tell me a bit about this book. Like, what motivated you to write it?
So Natalie and I started talking about this book in 2018. My goodness, it feels like three lifetimes ago. We were visiting with each other. She lives a couple hours away from me, so we sort of usually meet in a central location. And there is a place on the PA-Jersey border where the town has its own fair share of witchy shops. So we're wandering around town, ducking into this shop, ducking into that shop. And it's really fantastic to see how this cute slash quaint town has really accepted and embraced the number of witches that wander through every weekend to really celebrate their witchy inclinations. And so we were discussing at that point my larger following page on Facebook is Witchcraft Down and Dirty. And it just started as a meme factory, a meme farm, to really give people the opportunity to take themselves less seriously, because we really have a tendency to take ourselves way too seriously sometimes. And we talked about the idea of memes as ritual magic and how they can really not just impact you as your practice as a person, but impact your practice as a person on the internet. And so I was just finishing up the first draft edits on Blackthorn's Botanical Magic. And I'm like, okay, I love this idea, but I'm already overwhelmed with this whole writing thing. I'm going to need some space and some time. And so I had just finished, goodness, Blackthorn's Botanical Wellness had just come out. And I told myself I was going to take a break. I took a year off because I had a lot going on. And I said, okay, this is okay. This is really, it's time. It's necessary. Protection Magic and Botanical Wellness both came out in the same year. I was a little overwhelmed and I needed some space. And so I needed something that was fun and light and didn't take myself so seriously, because Protection Magic was hard to write. You've read chapter 6 and you know some of the stuff that happened. Mm-hmm. And so I needed to give myself permission to take myself less seriously. Natalie has written some really fun and incredible books on witchcraft that don't take themselves too seriously. And I said, this is really a great time to make sure that I am allowed to embrace the fun part of witchcraft again. Being an author can be really, there's a lot of pressure. One of my first fan letters was from a woman in Tibet who sent me a letter apologizing for only having purchased Blackthorn's Botanical Magic as a digital download instead of a paperback, because aww, owning a paperback book about witchcraft could get her killed.
Oh my gosh.
That is, that is so much pressure. Like, you're willing to risk your life to read what the words that I had to say. And so we said, we need some fun and we need some light. And Natalie said, hey, remember when we talked a few years ago about that meme magic book? Absolutely. I had started a proposal. Remember, you know, in publishing, the nonfiction books are sold on a proposal. You don't have to have the book written in front of you. So we said, you know what, this is something that's going to be really fun, and we'll bring it to, we both share the same agent. Natalie introduced me to our agent and we got on like gangbusters. So we brought it to her and said, hey, this is what we think. Do you think you can sell this? And she said, yes, every day and twice on Sunday, please, please let me work with you on this. So it was really incredible to get to laugh and have fun. And we planned lunches and we got to spend more time together because it gave us an excuse to make that multi-hour trek into the middle of nowhere between us to make sure that we had time to spend together. So it's not just a book about witchcraft. It's a journey of friendship. And that was really, really nourishing to get that experience.
I love that. And I'm not surprised to hear that there was such support for being able to have a book within this topic. I mean, social media, that's a hot topic. Especially putting it with witchcraft, like, man, bam, there you go.
It sells itself. It really does.
It really does. I guess I should ask though. So did you have a target audience in mind when you were writing this book?
It's funny you should ask, because when people think about magic and social media, they're picturing teens who were assigned female at birth. And it's like, magic is such a wider community than that. Not only is it a great primer for somebody who's new to their practice, but for witchcraft shops who are, you know, they're flagging on their numbers and they want to get more real engagement from their local community to drive their business sales. Here's an entire book of sales proposals given in calendar form. Oh, today's March 2nd. I can look at the March 2nd and get a real idea of a post that I can make to boost our social media for our shop.
Yeah. You know, I want to agree with you. I think when people think of social media, like you said, they usually think of female identity and young people, but it's so much more than that. And I mean, look at a lot of the millennials. I mean, we were around with MySpace. We were around with, I use this site called Bebo, which nobody seems to remember, but I remember it. There was that one website, what was it called? Like My Yearbook or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We grew up with social media, but back then nobody really used that term. Nobody,
no.
It was just kind of a site we all hung out with and coded, because we, for some reason, all knew how to code back then.
You're just imagining you're part of hackers just because you know you can spell HTML on your keyboard.
Yeah, my whole MySpace was like Danny Phantom and Neopet. So, you know, I was really just hacking away there.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Even when I was going to ask you about your target audience, I think that there's a stereotypical target audience for this, but many of the people around today use social media. I mean, my mother is a boomer and she has a social media account. I just found out she has Instagram. And I was like, what? I barely have a personal Instagram. I just made one and she's had one for years. So like, that was shocking to me. But yeah, so I think it's going to be cool to have this just be like generalizable, because social media is for everybody. And it very much has become obvious that it is for everybody.
Absolutely. It wasn't until, goodness, 2011 that my mother learned how to use email. And so,
oh my goodness,
I always expected that this would catch up with her at some point. It never did. But it's really interesting to see how each subset of generations has their own feeling about how this is going to play out. I love to see older people who are like, yes, let's do this. Please give me all of the information. I want to connect with my grandkids. I want to connect with my kids. I want to see pictures of my grandkids. There's so much that they understand they have the access to that they wouldn't have had it any other way. You know, it's nice to be able to say, oh, I had my grandkids over last weekend. But it can also be really fulfilling for somebody who's lonely. I was in a very serious car accident and was told I'd never walk again. I was in a wheelchair for multiple years. Once I got out of the wheelchair, I was on the platform crutches for also a number of years. So if I hadn't had social media to interact with my greater community, Millie had something to say too, then I would have really felt that lack of connection, that lack of community, because I can sit at home and I can interact with someone on social media, because it's so much more difficult to get out and be a part of that out in the world. It costs a lot of spoons.
Yeah, it's very accessible, which kind of loops back to what we were saying in the beginning of the episode. This is so unrelated, but I do think it is very funny when I was, you know, getting very deep into the internet in middle school, I want to say, elementary, middle school, and my family was like, you know, somebody's going to come find you and they're going to come take you. And, you know, you got to be careful what you post on there. And now the amount of people who are older, I see getting scammed, you know, by the Nigerian princes. And I'm like, what? what happened here?
Don't get in the car with strangers. Meanwhile, we're summoning a stranger from the internet to give us a ride somewhere.
Exactly. All right. Well, so back to your book, how is this broken down? Like, is it a lot of information? Do you have rituals in there? Like, what can readers expect when they go to open the pages?
It is a lot of information. It's over 400 pages.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because we've actually been cutting it down and cutting it down just to make sure that we can fit all of this really beautiful information in a digestible format. So we originally had individual months. And we had an entire sheet of correspondences for just that month. And it got really complicated. And they're like, maybe not. Let's not do that. So it's actually broken up like a date book. So you can start on January 1 or you can start on October 27th. You can just look at that that day of the week, that day of the year, and say, okay, this is something that resonates. You can look at the summer solstice and have a ritual for connecting to the land spirits around you. You can peek in on holy tides. You can stop in just because it's a Wednesday and you're bored. It's really, really flexible. It has everything from what you'll need to complete it, if it needs any special equipment, or if you just need a candle and some intention. So it's really important that we made it as accessible as humanly possible. The biggest issue when we were writing it was, do we talk about AI? It's here, but what do we do with it? How is that? What is the ethical path as far as that goes? And so there were some revisions that we were deciding to make, just because we wanted to make sure that everyone was on the same page, that people understood where we stood. You know, we're not going to steal from other authors. We're not going to steal from our public, because it seems neat at the time. So we came down on a anti-AI stance and made sure that the things that we have available to us are part of our community and nourishing that community, not just being extractive.
Oh my gosh. I just had a conversation with my, my main witch group chat about AI and its use in, you know, just the craft overall. So it's so funny you're bringing it up. We were just talking about this yesterday. We had a lot of back and forth with this conversation. Gosh, you know, who knows, maybe in a couple of years that might be like a part two, is AI, because AI is another thing that is very, very much influencing our world. And it's going to be a very common part of it, but it's such uncharted territory right now. Like, nobody really knows what to do with it. We do know that it steals from artists, from authors, from things on the internet, and that's not great, obviously. You know, that's not great, but yeah, it's going to be cool or interesting to see how it plays out. But I wanted to go back a second and ask, so when you were talking about how your book is broken down by the different, you can, you know, start it whenever, and you were talking about supplies, so are these things that, and I guess this is a general question and it can vary, but with the things that you could do every day, is it things that you're doing on a computer? Is it things that you're doing in person? Like, how does the social media aspect of that kind of link in with the activities?
It depends on the day. Okay. So this, I wrote January 1st, so it's always on the tip of my brain. People like to talk about the new year, new me. Let's talk about how we can move forward with a new year with purpose and intention and making sure that you're able to be your best self. So one of the activities is, you know, set up your phone in a place where you can record and, you know, give your space, whether that's your altar space, your computer desk, your bedroom, wherever it is, whatever space needs that new attention, and do a time-lapse recording of you straightening, clearing your space, wiping it down, maybe whether you're burning some incense or not, blessing your space, but making sure that you're using the intention of cleansing your space, not just cleaning it. And that gives you the option to post it to different social media aspects, wherever you feel safe and comfortable, you know, if it's friends list only. And we talk about the security of public versus private versus friends list in those considerations. But it's really gives you the opportunity to boost the intention of cleansing your space by sharing it with people who may need help to get that that oomph to cleanse your space. They might need a little bit of coaching, a little bit of cheerleading, so to speak, to make sure that that change gets made for them too. So it's about community impact as well as the magical side of, say, cleansing your space.
Cool. Yeah, I really like that. And I had one thing come to mind, and I know this pretty much goes against what the point, not the point, but like what people use social media for, but that's not to say that you can't make a account for yourself that is only for you, like as a blog.
Absolutely.
Like a personal, instead of journaling, you know, you have a personal Instagram, actually, I don't know if you could have, can you have a personal TikTok? See, I don't use TikTok really. So,
You go. They're very, very conscious of what happens in the world and what happens in the internet. So you can have an entire account and you can set it to private only. You can set it to friends only. You can set it to public. And then you can change individual videos. If you have something that you'd like to say to the general world, you can then change it to a public video for that video only. But there are plenty of people who keep their TikTok account private for safety and security reasons.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. And I also know that there's people too who might have a more public facing social media account, but they might not show their face, or they might not even have anything they say during it. They might just have like music playing over it, just like a music over, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And they're actually getting more popular. There's a creator that I follow on TikTok that I absolutely adore called The Wand Maker, and they don't have their face. They just talk about their own magical practice, some of the history of magical practices or different varieties, but you never see their face. You can see a close up of their hands and that's it. The tabletop they're focused on. They may show a stone or a crystal or obviously a wand, but you never see their face. And it's not about that. It's about the connection that they're making through their words, not their appearance. And I absolutely applaud that.
Yep. As somebody who has done that, there's definitely value, and I guess I'm saying this to anybody who's considering making an account, possibly just for themselves or trying to stay anonymous. There's absolutely value in having an account. Like, you do not need to show your face. People don't have to know what you look like. They don't even need to know what your voice sounds like.
No, they actually have different voiceovers that'll
mask
your voice.
They do. Yeah. So let me also ask, now that you have worked on this book with your co-author, I guess I shouldn't say for both of you because she's not here, but for you, how do you see the future of witchcraft evolving within the realm of social media? Like, where do you think we're going to go from here? And gosh, I know that could be probably a difficult question to answer.
No. It's a great question. When we talk to elder millennials, you know, we were there in the days of online covens, and the grownups, you know, at that point saying, well, that's not really a thing. That's not valid. That's not a thing. And then 2020 came along and helped us realize that absolutely is a thing. You have the connection that you need to the people that you love, and that's what's important. You know, God bless Zoom, or half the covens on the planet would have folded, because it's really important that we maintain everybody's safety and security when it comes to our health, not just our privacy. So it absolutely is a thing, and the connection for the future of magic gives us more of an opportunity to really delve into not just the creation of magical working groups over the space of the internet, but it gives us the permission to explore within our own realms to see, okay, what is it that we really are looking for as a magical practice. And how do we find that? You're not only limited to who's in your own backyard. You know, I lived in my early teen years in the middle of nowhere, and there's exactly one stoplight in our town. The grocery stores were still closed on Sunday because it was in the middle of nowhere. There weren't enough people to keep it going and open 7 days a week. So I would have been completely lost had I not had access to driving into Baltimore to find Bubble King Candle, or driving wherever to find what I'm looking for. When people say, oh, well, you know, Spencer's, they have fake tarot decks. It's just, you know, a random company and they're $10. It's great if you have the ability to support a local witchcraft shop. Please support your local communities. We're, you know, they're more than just a place to buy things. But if you live in Nebraska and you're 6 hours away from the nearest mall, that's not feasible. Having access to the internet, having access to social media makes you feel like you're not alone.
I think it's also important to recognize that it is a privilege to be able to live near places that have, you know, witchcraft shops or even a Spencer's. And I guess I would just caution for people to also be aware of the weight that their words can have, because
yes. Yeah,
like your example of somebody living in Nebraska, 6 hours away from a mall, perhaps they finally make it to a mall and they go to the only thing there is the Spencer's, and they can buy a tarot deck, and that's a big, big deal for them.
Yeah.
And then they get on the internet and somebody just immediately is like, oh, well, that's not a real tarot deck. Like, just crushes them, because perhaps they're very new and they don't know, you know, anything that's a valid tarot deck. It doesn't have to be a Rider-Waite-Smith. It could be anything to work the divinations in the world. Just I guess being aware of privilege that people have, having access to witchcraft shops, occult supplies, anything like that, and to not yuck another person's yum. I heard that phrase earlier, yes. And I don't really like the phrase, but I feel like it's very appropriate for what I'm saying right now.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh gosh. So Amy, can you tell us how to pre-order your book and where it's going to be available? Speaking of witchcraft shops.
Always support your local shop whenever possible. Every shop's going to have their own individual pre-purchasing policies for pre-order. You can also pre-order it on barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com if you don't have access to a local shop. I want to make sure that we have the opportunity to support our local businesses. There's a couple different places that'll take you to a local shop if you're not sure. If you go to amyblackthorne.com, it'll take you to some other spots. It'll give you the option for pre-ordering from your local stores. For somebody that's as close to local as you can be, there's a couple of places out there that'll actually donate money to your local libraries, to your local materials. So it's important to make sure that we are supporting our community as much as we can.
Yeah, and I know with a lot of occult shops or metaphysical shops, if you ask them to bring a book in stock, they will usually be very supportive of that, because you're their customer telling them what business that you want. So if you do go to your local metaphysical shop and they don't have a book that you're looking for, just ask them. Perhaps they'll get it in for you.
And your local libraries, absolutely. People worry that asking libraries to support a small author is somehow harmful. It's really not. They pay for their licenses for digital copies. They purchase copies for their county. So don't be concerned that you're not supporting your local authors. If you ask for it in your library, please do that. It'll let them know that that's needed, and it'll help them spend a little bit more money on their witchcraft section. Because sadly, a lot of times, especially in smaller libraries, people are so terrified of being caught checking out a witchcraft book that they'll steal it from the library instead of checking it out. And yeah. So those communities can be better served if we let them know, hey, this book is really neat. I'd like to check it out. And you're absolutely supporting your local authors by asking your local library to carry their books.
Yes, please don't steal from the libraries. Also, if you're nervous about asking your libraries for a witchcraft book, one, that is completely valid to be nervous about that. But two, most libraries do have a witchcraft section. So there's obviously people are looking for that. So don't feel too nervous, because a lot of the times your library is gonna in fact have that there.
Absolutely. And the same goes for things like tarot decks. I know there's people like, am I allowed to buy my own tarot deck? I heard that I'm supposed to be gifted a tarot deck.
Dear God, just please, are allowed to buy your own tarot deck.
please don't steal from our local witchcraft shop.
Oh no, don't do that either. Oh, gosh. Well, Amy, it has been such a pleasure having you on. I have one last question for you.
Fabulous.
And that is, if you could give one piece of advice to beginner, does not have to be related to what we spoke about today, what would that one piece of advice be?
Read absolutely everything you can get your hands on, especially if you think you won't agree with it, because it'll help refine your agreements or disagreements on that subject, on that topic, to help give you the confidence you need to talk about it with other people. Even if you're, you know, you're scared, you're nervous, you're worried about what your parents or your friends will think, like, absolutely read as much as you possibly can. Don't nail yourself to the floor with a label, because you spend a lot of time hearing about, oh, I'm a green witch, or I'm a forest witch, or I'm a space witch, or I'm a tangerine witch. Don't nail yourself to the floor with
not the tangerine witches.
God, I love me some tangerines. Because once you have aligned yourself with belief, it can be hard to give yourself permission to really change, experience, expand your thoughts on and feelings on the subject. So those labels that we give ourselves are not to nail ourselves to the floor. They're to give you some context about what we've done and where we believe and where we align. It's never meant to be a stick with which to hit yourself with. Don't ever think that.
That's very sound advice. And I want to double down on that and say, you are allowed to have a different opinion than any author or video editor or podcaster that you listen to, including myself, including Amy as a wonderful author, including anybody out there. You are allowed to have your own opinions. Don't feel bad about it, guys. All right. Well, Amy, this was so wonderful having you on. How can the listeners find you?
I am obviously everywhere on social media. You can find me on TikTok at Amy_Blackthorne_author. My Instagram is just Amy_Blackthorne_author, all one word. You can check all those links to the podcast, Blackthorne's Grove, and everything else I'm doing, as well as free downloadable intros to each of my book. The first 30 pages or so of each of my books are online at amyblackthorne.com. You can book a tarot reading. We can make time to hang out. You can see where I'm going to be in different areas of the world. I'll be in Texas in May, and it's really excited to get out into the world and see more people. I haven't flown since 2020, so I'm interested to see how that's going to go.
Well, best of luck with that. And I will link all of that in the description for this episode. If anybody is interested in finding me, you can find me also on social media. I'm on Instagram at Seeking Witchcraft, or my personal Instagram I talked about if anybody's interested in gym content. It's just spells and kettlebells. I'm on Twitter, even though I don't really use it, at Seek Witchcraft, Facebook at Seeking Witchcraft Podcast. There is a Facebook group too called Witches Seeking Witchcraft. And if you like the episode and want to support the show, you could do so at patreon.com/seekingwitchcraft. Well, thank you again, Amy, so much. This was so cool to talk about this topic. I was really stoked for this one. And I think we honestly could have just kept going and going and going.
There's so absolutely much about this. There is so much that we could talk about on this subject. An hour can't even touch it.
No, it can't even. And who knows, maybe in a couple of years, we'll have another topic about AI.
There you go.
You never know. We never know what the future is going to hold, right?
Absolutely. Tell that to MySpace. I mean, let's look.
Oh, rest in peace, MySpace. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening, and chat to you next time. Bye.